What's up, guys? Welcome to this episode of Unemployable. Today, we did a really big deep dive on a real property deal in Burleigh Heads on the Gold Coast. We started off talking about what it's like moving to Cyprus and a few other interesting things, but the body of it is about this deal. And it got really, really juicy as we got into the really granular detail of how the deal came about, what kind of people the guys took onto the site to make the deal happen, how the deal very, very nearly fell over. And then how, if you're watching this and you have no equity, you have no money, you have no experience or credibility in real estate, but you know that's the space you want to be in, what is the very next thing that you should do to get yourself into a deal like this with no money, no experience? How exactly do you do it? Where do you go? How do you show up? What are the tools and documents and steps that you need to take to attract an investor who will support you, be able to put the eyes on the project to make sure it's a good deal and so much more? So please watch this one till the end. It is very granular. It is real wealth creation training, and I know that you're going to love it. It's an absolute cracker. With that said, let's jump in. Like, subscribe, comment if you enjoy the content. What is up, everybody? Welcome to this episode of the Friday Sessions. I am here with the boys, Mark, Eric, and James. We are coming to you from all over Australia. Myself, of course, from Cyprus, as usual. Mark's in Melbourne today, which is, well, you know, probably why he looks slightly depressed. I don't know.
Depressed, exactly. Yeah.
Just kidding, mate.
I've actually got my shoes on.
Are they prison bars behind you, or are they all gone now?
Yeah, fucking exactly. Exactly. Melbourne's gone to shit, I tell you. There's people getting killed in the streets. Property taxes are through. I got a builder today. A builder today telling me, I tell you, a podcast you should do, an episode you should do, the building costs and approvals and regulations. It's all cooked here, industry stuff. A lot of people complaining in Melbourne, I tell you that much.
Yeah, it's not just Melbourne. Since I've moved over here, not that, you know, look, everywhere's got its problems, so I don't want to just sing the songs of one place. I'll share a couple of them with you to start with, but I've got so many DMs from Aussies just frustrated at the moment, but hopefully the market's going to move and, you know, things go in cycles, but there is a lot of frustration out there generally, I think, that we're, you know, I think with the election and everything as well, it'll be good when that's over and done and moving forward. But, yeah, good to see you guys. Welcome back to the show.
Good to see you, mate. Tracking you on Instagram and seeing what you've been up to and some funny stories like the insurance thing and the car thing, which I'm sure you'll touch base on. It's just so, so different.
I thought I'd share, just to kick it off, just give people a bit of an update, because there is a lot of curiosity about like moving countries and starting businesses. And, you know, like I'll just share a couple of quick stories before we jump in. And I've got a really good find this week for all of us. Anybody on this podcast is going to love what I'm going to share right at the start, which was a recommendation from Stephen Bartlett that I tried last night. And it's a game changer, like maybe the biggest game changer I've had in a while. So I'll share it with you as well. But moving over here, like we're now into that period of like we've stopped, you know, we went on this sort of gallivanting through Europe when we first arrived, into Italy and Spain, a whole bunch of stuff. And now we're back here setting up a home in Cyprus. And, you know, it's a lot when you move countries. And I've done it once before, but you know, when you don't know a single person, you don't know any of the systems, and importantly, you are not in the system. So I bought a car, and I went to get this car registered and insured. And so, you know, the car guy took me to the insurance lady, and I was there literally for 4 hours to arrange insurance, just the insurance. And then she's like, all right, now we got to get the car registered. And I'm like, well, how do I do that? And they said, oh, we'll take you. And so the car salesman and the insurance lady, we jump in the insurance lady's car and drive to the main roads department. It's crazy. And then we go in there. And if I had not had her, there's no way I would have navigated through the whole process of getting a number. And I thought it'd be this big official process. And in the end, she just comes over with a piece of paper and a number on it, says, take a photo of this. This is your number in Cyprus. If you get pulled over, show this to the police. And I was like, what the hell? Like this? It's literally just torn off a notepad with a number on it. And that's my driver's number in Cyprus. It's just crazy. And so today I'm hoping to actually get the car registered. So that might be another 3 or 4 hours. I don't know. Who knows? But it's fun and games when you're moving countries.
Does it help with a brown paper bag full of cash over there? Do you get the front of the line a bit quicker?
Look, I don't know that it's there. Certainly, I don't think we're there. But it's an interesting country. Like, you know, there was war here in the 70s, you know, and so there's still war damage. And people who see my videos on YouTube, they see like where I'm sitting right now is rock star, like, so I'm on the beachfront, but everything, like you know, walk outside my building, and the buildings behind is a mix of brand new renovations being done and buildings that have still got, you know, just remnants in a wreck. So it's kind of a really interesting town. It's not for everyone, but I like it. I like the grime. I like the, because what's also happening right now is there's money pouring in from all over the world. On the weekend, we took a drive up into this hill area. So when you drive into Limassol from the airport, you see these mega mansions being built, and it's so similar to the Hollywood Hills. So I said to Cass, you know, let's drive up there and just go have a look. So we went and had a look on the weekend, and there's these rock star, architecturally designed, stunning homes that just have panoramic views of the Mediterranean. So there's all this money pouring in from around the world because of the tax incentives. So the city has this feeling of, you know, rejuvenation and energy coming into the place. But it's also confronting, like, it's not easy, man. Like, I've got to say, you know, I don't know anybody. On yesterday, Sunday morning, I walked around for 3 hours around the city just looking at 3 or 4 co-working spaces and just realizing I'm going to get myself into a co-working space. I've got to get around people. This afternoon, I've got an inspection of the one that I want to be in. And it's cool. Like, and it's just resetting up a life and getting to know new people and learning how it works. And it's you just got to go with the punches, and you feel alive, and then you have days of panic mixed with days of, oh my god, this is so good, today feeling like you're a long, long way from home. So yeah,
would it you know, I mean, when you moved to the States, what was that, 20 years ago or probably?
No, 15 years ago.
15 years ago. Is there any similarities between, you know, European move to a US move, or especially in also different age brackets when you're in different time of life? Mm. I'm not sort of throwing you under the bus from the fact that, you know, past 50 now, but I mean, the energy is different.
It is different. You know, it's funny. I have a lot more money now than when I went to America. Like, when I went to America, I had like a year and a half runway. That was it. You know, I'd had a little bit of money. But I feel more vulnerable now, which is weird. Like, I'm 51 years old and I don't know what it is, but I just feel a bit more vulnerable than I did maybe when you're in your 30s. I was in my late 30s when I moved to America, and I just felt invincible. Ignorance is bliss kind of thing, you know, like you're just like full of beans and you don't sort of have any sense of risk. But over here, I just do feel a little bit more vulnerable. I think it might be partly age and partly culture. As in, this is very different. Like, in America, you kind of have a sense of things. It's very easy to meet people, whereas here there's a lot of either Russian or Cypriot who English is very much their second language, where in America you just open your mouth and talk to somebody, it's very easy. Whereas here, like, the Russian people that my whole building, everyone in my building is Russian except us. We're the only non-Russians in this entire building. So, and we don't have that natural fit culturally. Like, they're just a different vibe, the Russians. It's a, you know, on Sunday morning we went and had breakfast, and it, like, literally nearly everybody in the cafe was Russians or Cypriot people, and they sort of, it's not like, it's where I moved to LA, it's very multicultural. Like, there's people from everywhere you go, whereas here they're either Russian or Cypriot, you know, with very few exceptions. The Cypriots are family people, and the Cypriots are really warm. And like this morning, I was in the ocean, and all the old Greek guys are sitting there. They're very warm and friendly and welcoming. And the Russians kind of tend, in my experience, to just stick to themselves. And I just feel a different vibe from them. So, yeah. But anyway, it's interesting. It's challenging, and you certainly learn a lot about yourself. And but you do feel certainly very alive. And I'm looking forward to taking on an entrepreneurial challenge here. You know, you've got like a really good environment, I think, to do that. So yeah, anyway, we'll see. But the, you know, registering the car and all that stuff, it was all just fun. I'm going to put it out in a video. You got to laugh, just go with the flow. But yeah, anyway, that's a bit of an update from Cyprus for you in real time. One thing I want to share off the Stephen Bartlett podcast before we jump in, because we want to pick up on that story about you guys with your real estate deal, because I know there's a lot of people really interested in, you know, the detail of like putting a deal like that together and then funding it. And I know we're going to talk about the funding in detail in a future pod, but I'd love to talk a bit more about your deal and the actual nitty gritty reality of like finding, negotiating, make sure the deal doesn't fall over, what could have made it fall over and all that.
We had Dan on the podcast this week. We did some recording, right? And he's we call him Tinfoil Hat Dan a little bit, right? And for those of you guys that don't know Dan, Dan's a business partner of mine. We call him Ads Dan. Spends, you know, over $50 million a year on ads, generates about $200 million of revenue off that. And we call him Tinfoil Hat Dan because he's kind of just like, he's that guy that's always, you know, hey, what about this? Yeah, but you got to watch out. And, you know, like, so kind of brings you back to earth sometimes. And we're talking about AI and he's like, you know, the issue with AI is he feels like it's going to make people dumb, right? Like use it for efficiency, but don't use it for everything. Don't let it think for you. Don't stop thinking, you know? And I think this is where, like, you look at what Adam just said. Now, I'm not the fastest typer in the world. You three are probably faster typers than I am. I never, you know, that typing course in school, I didn't listen too well. You know, I was like, I'm not going to need this. And then all of a sudden, here we go, not being as efficient. But something like that just changes the game for someone like me. That changes the game for the person that on the resume says, you know, I can type 150 words a minute. Like, who gives a shit anymore? Like, do you know how to use AI is a lot more important question to, right, to answer or have that on your resume. And this is, these are the little things that we just talk about on a podcast like this with such major impact. Like, how are you going with that other one, Adam, that automatically replies to emails? Yeah. So basically saves the emails in draft. You've turned that off because of this now?
Yes, because what was doing, that's AI. This is far less AI. So what this was called Serif, and there's a few of them. But what Serif does is, you connect it to your Gmail, and when you get into your Gmail, all of your emails have responses written by the AI. And it did a good job in terms of it learns to write like you, it does, and it learns really quick, because what it does is spends half an hour reading every email that you've ever written in the last year, and it works out how you format emails, your tone, it knows your Zoom link, it knows all these things, and automatically does all that. But I find myself going in and then correcting and tweaking and all of this. Whereas this one, it's a record button and I just hit record and hold it down. And then when I'm done, it's exactly what I said. And it hardly changes it at all, unless I want to get the AI to change it.
So how does it work with spacebar and stuff like that? Like in paragraph and double line and that type of thing?
I'll go back through and maybe add some spaces. But that's it. It's super quick. Mark?
Hey, James, what you said about is AI making me dumb is extremely relevant. And I think if people are just using AI to make their daily tasks easier to do, it is going to make them dumb, but not in the short term. What it's going to do is make them dumb in the long term, because in most industries, medical, surgical, accountants, lawyers, 80% of the people in these industries aren't going to have a job in 10 years. And the 20% that are best in craft are going to be the ones that are controlling the AIs that are doing the work. So if we are every day just using AI to improve our email and we're not using AI to become in the top 20% of that industry, we are going to be made dumb and fucked, because it's the top 20% that are going to control the AIs that do all these new jobs.
Yeah, interesting stuff.
It's moving at such a fast pace. Like, I remember us in an AI business that we invested in early on, Adam, talking about making something like this for clients, right? Not long ago. We thought it was a great idea. We're like, wow, right? And then all of a sudden these other, you know, platforms come out and create it, and it's gone, right? And I think that's with AI, like businesses within AI. That other one that funny enough,
we spoke about YouTube, this, Eric, with BlackBerry, the BlackBerry story as well.
Yeah, I want you to bring that up in this pod as well, actually. But I was watching our podcast, and it's funny because I am now listening to the ads on our podcast. And it's not that we put the ads up, it's YouTube put in the ads, right? And that's how they generate revenue. So it's interesting what type of ads are being targeted on our podcast, right? We're quite entrepreneurial and wealth creation focused. And there was an ad that I got targeted on listening to the Unemployable podcast, which basically was a guy selling AI models for OnlyFans. that you can invest in your own AI model now, right? I remember we were talking about this a year ago, not that we were going to do it, but this was just kind of in passing, like, oh, you could do this now. Imagine that and imagine this. And this guy's literally telling you, this is how it's done. This is my business. This is where you can invest. This is how it's done. And you can have your own and you can scale it as. And I'm just like, that was like an amazing idea, right? 6 months ago. And now you're going to have so many people doing it, you know, like it's just amazing at how fast it's going. And what happens is if you're not listening, or you're not educating yourself around it enough, and you're not listening, it's just listening, right? Listening to Adam, writing down Whisperflow, going on to Whisperflow, downloading it, pay the, what, how much is it a month?
There's a free version, which gives you X amount of words a month. And then the paid is 12 US a month.
Right, pay the 12 US amount a month and actually use these things. And that's one thing I take my hat off to Adam. Out of all of us here, I think maybe James is a little bit different because I know he adapts a lot with these things, and probably so does Mark. But from what I can see, Adam, like as soon as he hears something new, he's downloading it, he's trying it. Any type of AI, like he's out of our anyone that I surround myself with on a you know daily weekly basis, he's one of those guys that just goes yes, downloads it, pays for it, tries it, tests it, breaks it onto the next thing. And I think that's what I myself, I'll raise my hand, and I think that's what most people need to get better at is just listening and actually taking action on some of these items, because they can literally change, right, how you do work and how efficient you can be.
I think where you get the source of that AI from too is probably partly relevant, someone you have respect for, like Diary of Stephen Bartlett.
Correct.
Because there is fucking 5,000 other AIs, and it becomes overwhelming. And what you end up doing is having analysis paralysis, and you know, I'll just write emails myself and just stick to the old way of doing it, because you're just getting, as you're right, Eric, you watch a video, you're on Instagram or whatever, you just get bombarded. And the more this speeds up, the more it's going to be happening. And you just get a lot of confusion. So where you get your source of information, I think, is probably the takeaway that I'm getting from it from there.
I agree.
I think that little note there, James, is really interesting. And Mark's touched on this before about the power of and importance of trust, and where media is going is that, it can be really beneficial, guys, to have a look at your echo chamber. So take a moment and look at who you are subscribed to on Instagram, who you are subscribed to on YouTube, and do an audit and say, is this person really adding quality and value to my week? And if they're not, let's have a flush, you know, and get trusted sources. Because, James, you're bang on there. Like, I watch Stephen Bartlett because he is best in class. Like, the video he just released is unbelievable for what we're doing in our life right now. Like, on the latest pod that was just released by the Diary, he said they're spending £7 million a year running that podcast. That's $14 million Australian. But the reason I mentioned is I follow very few people on socials, but the people I follow are really interesting and quality to me, because that way I only see the quality recommendations, and they get to being quality because they are very cautious about their recommendations. Yeah.
So then, Eric, that means your OnlyFans needs a good flush too as well, mate. Where are you going?
Yeah, you don't even know the rabbit hole that's going down at the moment.
And Mark, if we got time, I want to talk about these two trades. So you did two trades, Tesla and MSTR. We'll come back to the end if we have time. Both up 100% in a week. Imagine making an investment with 100% upside in 1 week. So amazing. We'll either get to that today or we'll get to the next one. Moving on. James and Mark, you guys have got a project in Burley. It's now unconditional. And it's basically, maybe you guys just give us the broad strokes of what it is and what you're planning to do. But just talk us through, like, up to this point, just between how the deal was found and how you got it to the point of unconditional. Yeah. I think people will find this really interesting.
Yeah. I want to take it back one step even further before that. And this is how, you know, relationships get built and how deals get made and how companies get structured. So James, obviously, we've been friends for quite some time, met him at one of the first Reliable conferences, and, you know, been mates ever since. And obviously we've become closer and kind of knowing each other more and more on a personal level through the podcast. And you know, we both know each other's situations. We both know each what value we can each bring into different things. And obviously James has real estate and development experience in the past. He was out of the game for quite some time because obviously he's been concentrating on the online space. And I've been, you know, developing properties all the way through. And obviously he's seen that, and we got talking one day and he's like, why don't we set up a bit of a development company? Right. And I said, yeah, okay, well, what does that look like? You know? And he's like, I'll create a process where we can go out and find deals, right? And reach out to owners of land and this and that. And we sat on it and we talked about it. We had a few meetings about it. You know, I've got a lot of contacts in the industry, from architects to town planners and civil engineers and all the consultants, you know, access to some money and these types of things. So we got talking about it, and James being James, next thing you know, 1 week later, he's got a website built, and he's got a name for the business, for the property development group, and, you know, with past projects on it. And this is the thing, guys. One of these things is, talking about it is one thing. Taking action is a whole other level. Like, when James created the website, he kind of made it real. Even in my mind, I'm like, this guy's created a website. He spent the time. He's actioning these things. He's telling me about this, you know, software that he's building in the background on how he's going to go and, you know, reach out to potential vendors so we can create more deals. And then I was like, okay, so he's actually quite serious about this, and so am I, and let's see what happens. I then get an email through the network of an off-market opportunity in Burleigh Heads. And this was probably going back, what was it now, maybe 6 months ago? James, what did you think? If not prior?
It was February last year.
February last year. All right.
And I started, yeah.
Yeah, so February last year, when it first came across my desk, and it was a potential JV with the vendor, and came through an architect and through a builder mate of mine. So I said, James, this looks quite interesting. Go have a look. So he had a look. Next thing you know, we're breaking down what that looks like from you know, a land perspective, what the vendor wants. James is walking the site with the vendor. He's going on, you know, going to the cafe, having a coffee, sitting down, seeing what their needs, what their wants are. And long story short, it ended up not going to, nothing happened, right? Because it was just like, I think the needs and wants of the vendor were different at that time from what we initially expected, and not much more work got done on it. So that was forgotten about. You know, we keep progressing, doing our pods, doing our things, living our life, running our businesses. And then all of a sudden it comes back up on realestate.com now. So now it's not off market anymore. It's on market. And James and I contacted each other, and we said, man, this thing's back on the market. Maybe it's worth looking at again. And I go a lot with gut at the same time. Like, when certain things happen, I'm like, we gotta look at this. And, you know, I wasn't looking for it. It just scrolled through and bang, there it was. And I'm like, I put two and two together. And I'm like, okay, well, this is interesting. James, here we go again. You know, let's have a look at this. And funny enough, the agent that had it is a prominent real estate agent in the Burleigh Heads area. Well, my good friends that just moved from Melbourne bought a house off him a week before. And I was at the inspection because my friends wanted, they wanted some advice on the property. So they said, come have a look. And I actually know who the agent is. He knows who I am because I own other property in Burleigh Heads as well. We got on. How are you? Good. How you been? How's the market? This and that. And then I mentioned the property and I said, hey, listen, you know, a partner of mine is going to get in contact with you to discuss potential opportunity on looking at this land and maybe putting in an offer and seeing what the vendor wants. And at the time I had offers over a certain amount, and it was an amount that I don't think, you know, many people would pay. And James started doing his work. And what does that work entail? That work entails talking to the agent, right? Getting an understanding and asking the right questions on what the actual vendor wants, what is his position on the property? Why is he selling? We then did background research, reaching out to some consultants. And when I say consultants, I'm talking architects, town planners. What can you do on the property? Because this property actually had a DA. What a DA is, it already had a development application approval on it, right? But it didn't work. It was for three units. It's a superior block, not many around like it. And it had three units. And the reason why they had three units is because they were three really, really big units, basically separate houses. And the vendor wanted to keep one for himself. Well, that changed, right? So once he found out what the vendor actually wants now, it's easier to sit there and negotiate on price and terms. And that's what we did. So once we got a better understanding on what you can actually put on that block, and we sat down, we had a meeting with the town. When I say we have a meeting, literally we're in the office with the architect, we're doing sketches, what can we do on here? And we had two different templates, basically two different sketches on what you can actually do on it. We then negotiated back and forth. You chime in at any time, James.
I was about to say, that's the high level. There's a lot in between that, though, from when I initially connected with the owner. As I said, walked the site, sat down, tried to understand what his needs were, and he didn't really know what he wanted either. He'd had a few developers walk through and kick the tires, so to speak, and there was not a lot of urgency. He's 58, 2 years from retirement. He owns them all in his own personal name. And there's no real urgency. He has, look, I'm not that in much of a rush. I'd like to keep one. So we then went away and said, oh, okay, fair enough. So you want to stay in the deal as a joint venture partner? In other words, you kick the land in. We'll then fund the balance, do the build, the whole lot. You keep yours, we'll peel off. And so there's a whole lot to unpack in that, which I won't go into too much depth. It'll take a bit too long. Walk the site. He's gone cold. We were having meetings with architects back then. We went and walked the site with the architect. Back then, we had town planners doing some reports. So it already had a whole bunch of reports done, like geotech reports, soil tests, all that good stuff like that. So there's a fair bit of work goes into that up front. Then, as Eric said, it went quiet. But what we worked out in the meantime, when it went back on the mark, and we got to a number, we got to a number that he was happy at, and that we were happy at. And then he went back on, he put it back on the market. And I said to Eric, we're going to give this guy what we're giving him now. He's just got to fork out exit in comms. So anyway, that's his issue, not mine. Maybe he wanted to feel more, he felt more protected that he's got an agent dealing with him and that he's going to get the price that it probably should achieve in a market like this. The market's pretty warm in this burly pocket. It is a premium pocket. So then at the diet, it must have been 2 or 3 months. It was just went flat. And as I said, we saw it come back to the market, and that's when I said, Eric, Mick, right, the agent, yep, give him a call. And then on it went from there. And then there was a lot of twists and turns. I bought a few sites in my time, and there was
I think what happens though, it's a good collaboration, right? Like, you kind of know what your strengths are. You know what my strengths are. I know what my strengths are, and I know what your strengths are. And this is very, very important, right? And when we sat down, James and I initially, we sat down and nutted out, okay, well, one, why would we do something together? Why do you need me and why do I need you, right? That's very upfront, because to me, the personal relationship is more important than any business relationship. It's more important than any money being made. And I was very, very clear. And we've had to have some difficult conversations on the way to clear the air on expectations of each other. Right. And this is very, very important to have now rather than having it in 6, 12, 18 months down the track.
Yeah. Especially let me clarify when you say difficult conversation. It's not like Eric and I at each other. It's just conversations most people will feel uncomfortable having. And it's just like, let's just have the uncomfortable conversation now so we don't have to have the heated conversation later.
Can we double click on that? Because I'd love to just get an example, because these are the types of things that and not talked about in podcasts. Like, what is a real example of a difficult conversation?
Well, in this situation, we put together a roles and responsibilities and expectations document up front, and we shared it in the private coaching program as well, just about who's doing what. And in this situation, You know, it would be more likely that I would be running, be more active and hands-on in the job. Whereas if there was going to be some capital required, that if we were going to look at it, it would be Eric that would more likely be tipping the capital in. I've got money tied up. Eric's got more surplus capital than I do at the moment. And if that was the case, well, then the splits are going to change, aren't they? So what does that look like? Okay, well, fair enough. And so it was like you're having a negotiation with the mate. First and foremost, we're going to preserve that piece. But then what's realistic? And so to get to that point, there was a lot of ingredients that would go into that conversation. And they come from a funding perspective. And we will talk about funding when we've actually settled the deal. Is about if there's a certain piece of money that needs to come from a private funder and it's going to be private money, how much is that? What's that going to cost Eric and I as the development company out of the joint profit? And if that was the case, Eric, did you want to take that and take that piece and take that profit? But with that, you're going to have to put up some, you know, some collateral potentially. If that is the case, well, then Eric's got more risk in this deal than I do, so he's going to be rewarded accordingly. So what does accordingly look like? Well, yeah. You have to have that conversation. You go about, well, what was the funder going to take, Eric? It doesn't bother me one bit if the funder was going to take, let's say, how argument's sake, the interest component was $500,000 on this portion or piece of money. I would rather you take it than them take it. We're going to be paying it anyway. So it's not one of those ones where I go, oh, Eric, you should do me a favor because you're my mate and only charge half the amount of interest. It's, no, we're going to take it. They're going to take it. You take it. More yay for you. So, and then we'll go, well, that's now not a negotiation piece that you're sticking the money in because you're getting handsomely rewarded for it. So what does it look like on the risk level? Okay, well, now we've got to talk about if it went tits up, what does it look like? So there's the conversations, and we won't go too deep in the weeds on it, back and forth. And they're the uncomfortable conversations, but they save a difficult conversation down the other end. And literally today I was at Eric's place, and we signed up on our agreement, signed off the trust deeds, signed off on the whole shebang. We are now rock solid. We know exactly who's getting what, when they're getting it, between Eric and I, that is. And Eric's wearing two hats. So he's got one hat on. He's taken and it's an attractive piece of finance. And we had to move very quickly on it too, because the one piece we're not really explaining here is the vendor, won't say he's unrealistic, but from a development perspective, you want to have at least, you want to have 180 days if you can under due diligence to get all your consultants lined up, your finance lined up, some breathing space, all the testing done. And you want to nearly have your DA underway before you've even settled on the property. In this case, we had 30 days. Now, we've kicked this out. We've had two extensions, and we've had all the usual bullshit. I've got from the owner, I've got other buyers lined up and this and that. Well, so you got it's nearly like a game of poker. It's like a game of bluff. Well, if you do, cool. Fucking take them. But you're also negotiating with the vendor. You've got an agent involved who he only gets paid when a transaction transpires. So he's going, guys, I don't think I can get this extension for you. And we're like, well, that's fine. Go find another buyer. So there's all this going on in the background, and I'm playing like the guy at the agent's heels the whole time, getting all the little stuff. So when I need something big done, I go, Eric, call him, because he's getting pissy at me because I'm pushing him harder and harder and harder for all the little minute stuff that needs to get done to make sure we're making the right decisions. So a good cop, bad cop scenario that you're playing along the way as well. So, I mean, that was a fairly big mouthful. Wrapped up in one, but you still sort of get just to one piece there is that in my time and probably yours, Eric, in doing deals, is that the time frame was super tight, so we had to move quick, but also then play that game of negotiation poker, if you will.
What were you gonna say, Mark?
With relation to and you guys haven't said it explicitly, but I just wanted for the audience. Kind of highlight it, because you know I've had situations where I've been into business deals or property deals, and because of naivete, it was just like 50-50 split. And after 6 months or after a year or after the deal's done, there's a little bit of resentment because one person either did all the heavy lifting or one person basically took all the risk. So for in layman's terms, what you're basically saying that if you go into a deal with just a basic 50-50 split, there is a fair chance that there's going to be one party or another that might be disappointed if everything isn't being split evenly, capital, execution, everything, right? So effectively what you're saying is the split is what had to take the negotiating.
Look, this is the thing. And correct, that's what we negotiated up front. who is going to be the person that's going to be running the job, so to speak, on doing the day-to-day, dealing with the all the back and forth from all the consultants. We have our high-level meetings. And I said, well, I'll run that model. You're a busy guy, busier than I am, Eric, at the moment. I'll take that to offset some of the risk in that negotiation. So I'll do a bit more work. You're putting taking a bit more risk. So how do we even this out so it's not a complete whitewash where it's not worth me doing it at all, or Eric doing it on his own?
People out there that are maybe looking to get into their first property deal or don't have the capital to go and do a deal on their own. And, you know, I think you guys speak about this a lot in the property course, but property is one of those things where if you can find the right group of people, you don't need to have all the capital, you don't need to have all the experience. So if there's people out there trying to put their first deal together, one of the most important pieces that you can understand at the start is working out what each piece of the puzzle is worth. And if you don't yet know that, then going and seeing people of that experience in property so you can flush that out so that you don't kill a great deal because you didn't quite have the working arrangement right.
Or kill a friendship or a relationship at the other end of it because one person feels that they've been shafted.
A big thing, right, I always ask myself is why, right? Why would I do this with James, right? Why would James do it with me? And I'll give you why I've done it with James. One is I know he's got experience in doing this already. Two, and I'm being open and honest here, right? So you guys can take it how you want, but this is how I think. I look at James. James is single, and James has no kids. James has time, right? That's the reality. He's got, right, himself that he's got to worry about. And I know, obviously you have a missus, but that means a lot, right? I'm in partnership with partners that have kids and have multiple kids and have, you know, multiple wives and, you know, overtime. And that takes a toll on somebody. Two is James is very, very organized. He's very anal. He's very, very detailed in what he does and how he structures his life, his folders. He's onto it. So that is all worth something. Now, people can go and do a deal and go and get private finance and go and get a project manager and just pay them as consultants and move on. But anything I do, I collaborate. And that is one of my rules and guidelines. I collaborate with, you know, you guys on the podcast, right? I collaborate in all of my businesses. And for me, it's, I want to see my friends succeed. I want to win together. And that is very, very important for me, right? But we all still have to know what value you bring to the table. No deal is ever going to be perfect. This deal will not be perfect in regards to, right, is the split exactly what you want? Is it what I want? Is it, am I going to feel, you know, the best at the end because you got X and I got X? You'll not get it 110% right, but you got to get it right enough where it doesn't ruin the friendship in my eyes. It doesn't ruin that relationship. For me, like I said before, that is the most important thing. So you got to really ask the pardon.
I was going to say the best way not to ruin the relationship is the deal makes money.
well, we try to break this thing, right? Like, let's go back to the deal now. You go ahead, Adam.
I was just going to say before you tie that off, underneath the brim of these hats, it says idea, capital, execution. That's the puzzle that you are referring to when you said the pieces of the puzzle.
This is it live.
And it's whether it's business or whether it's property, whenever there is a deal. Like if you're listening to this and you've got a business idea or you're doing a property, it's always three things. Idea, somebody's got the idea, what's it worth? Usually not that much. The capital is critical. Without the money, nothing happens. And then the execution is also critical. It's not like, yeah, and that's where Eric's trying to describe here. You're looking at a guy in James who's super organized. The other thing is over James's left shoulder right now is the project. So like, out the back of where he lives, he's right there. He's Johnny on the spot, right? So he's right there. He's hungry. He's got time. You know, he wants to do, you know, to do this deal. So all those things sort of blend into the execution piece. And when I look at you, Eric, you have the ability to do high level things, but you've got so much going on. You've got MX store, you've got unemployed, you got stuff everywhere, right? So you need to be, all of you need to be real. If Eric's like, I can do this, I want more, I can execute this myself. In reality, the thing that's going to make this work is Eric's very real about how much of his attention he's willing to apply into the project. James is going to probably apply more day-to-day attention. And then you've got to have that real conversation. And there is no, like, people email me all the time, so what's a fair deal? I'm like, bro, like, I don't know you. I don't know the other guy. I don't know the complexities of the deal. Like, I did a property deal where I provided all of the money and only got 20% of the equity. And people were like, oh, man, you should have asked for more. I'm like, bro, you don't know, A, anything about the property. B, you don't know anything about the guy I did the deal with, who's a highly competent individual. And in his case, getting the money is actually quite easy because he's a competent individual, right? So in his, doing business with him, money, the priority of the money was lower than somebody who's a first-timer. So when Shannon and Carson first started, they gave away all of the profit and took no equity just to get a deal done because they had no credibility when they first started. So all of this stuff is liquid. And what leads to success is people who are willing to be flexible and honest and transparent. And that's how you don't blow shit up.
It's that time of year again at Unemployable, where we're opening up our Unemployable business coaching program. It's over a 12-month period. And with that, you get private one-on-one coaching, group coaching, as well as private and live events throughout the year. You could get private coaching with me, and not only me, but our panel of experts that we have put together. These panel of experts have been in our network and are the exact people that we use in our business successes. People from branding, sales, marketing, our lawyers, our accountants, everyone that has helped build our businesses, you have access to. If this sounds of interest, go to www.unemployable.com.au/coaching and register your interest to see if it's a fit for you and us. Hope to see you there.
I've got a tech company I invested in years ago. I owned 70% of the business. Well, I didn't invest in it. I started it. I brought in a CEO and a CTO, and I gave away 30% of the business to those two guys to run it after I built it from scratch for a year and a half. But then later on, we had the VCs come in and put in a couple of million US dollars. And they said, who the fuck is this Australian guy? Because the company's in America and I was now back in Australia, that owns 70% of the business, isn't working in the business, isn't here. If we put this $2 million in, we want you guys incentivized more. He has too much equity. Now, I could have gone, no, I own 70%. You know, fuck you. No, like they were right. I had to greatly reduce my position in order to make room for the investors coming in with the real money. Like I bootstrapped it for nothing. They were putting in $2 million US at that time. And I had to take a big hit in my equity. But the result was we got a $10 million post-money valuation back then. But I owned 38% or something like that. I had half my equity, right? So what I'm sort of getting at here, guys, is that success in life and business is understanding there's really only three pieces: idea, capital, execution, and being really honest and transparent. These guys know each other well. And I just take my hat off to you guys for being able to have those difficult conversations. What's it really worth? Because when money comes in, the bigger the deal, the money's going to go, hang on, you're getting what for what? You've got to have that conversation before that smart money comes along and says, ask those questions.
And just for the audience chat, our whole objective was to do this. How can we do this with both of us with zero coin in the deal, like not a cracker? Mm-hmm. And the reason Eric's got some coin up is because it was a piece that we'll pull apart the finance later on, is the piece that Eric took out. It was too good not for Eric to take that part of that deal out. I mean, it was just fucking bonkers not to. So there's a whole bunch of other stuff that I said we'll kick around later on another pod. But this deal nearly didn't go through, and there's been a lot of work that goes on putting this together. Like the amount of effort that goes into actually getting a feasibility to stand up and getting accurate near enough to the dollar that you can from every consultant. You know, and then you're sitting down with, and I'll talk to this in a minute as well, I'm sitting down with a valuer, excuse me, having a coffee or a breakfast and getting an honest opinion. What's this thing work? Well, like, let's say it's 4 million bucks or 4.4 million bucks to the buyer. If the valuation on just for the land acquisition comes in at 4 million bucks, where's the other 400 grand going to come from? So you're going to have that conversation. We go, fuck, so we got to meet with the value. And this is to where Eric, you know, I'll be doing a bit of work here. But Eric spent, how many years have you been on the Gold Coast, Eric?
Almost 18 now.
Right. So, Eric, we wheel straight into the valuer having a coffee. We wheel straight into one of the better architects who, and then we went straight into one of the town planners. And they all work together. They all know each other. The bank, the bankers know the valuers. Like the whole lot. For a greenhorn to come in here and put this deal together, well, they'd get fucking demolished. They really would.
Yeah.
They'd get that. It wouldn't work out for them real well.
What was, and this what is, was, go ahead. What was the one thing that nearly killed the deal, or what was the one thing that got you closest to not the deal not going ahead? What was that one?
Time.
I'm gonna explain that because, yeah, one, it was time, right? The thing is, the better the sites that are out there, right, the vendors know, right? So they're not going to go and give you 3 months due diligence and 6 months settlements and these types of things. Why? Because there's a lot of eyeballs on it. And there's going to be people that are going to be coming in and offering cash offers. And there was other offers that got put to the table that the agent told me about. Right.
That were over hours, but they were like a normal developer. They wanted
correct
a longer term.
Right.
So
the terms. But again, ask, the key is knowing what the vendor actually wants. Right. And understanding that, you can then compile your offer and go from there. So time was one thing. And I've got a few things on it to go at the moment, right? I got a few property deals on it at the moment, right? We're growing unemployable time, right? So I sit down and I think about it and I'm like, all right, if I don't buy this, if we don't buy this, how am I going to feel? If I do buy this, how am I going to feel? Now, James didn't even know this. And the last conversation we had on the first initial due diligence, initial finance clause was, we're not going ahead with it, right? And I know that day when I spoke with James, he was not happy, right? There, I can hear in his voice, it was like, man, we spent a lot of time on it, right? And because I know he knows it's a good deal. We've tried to break this feasibility. For those that don't know what a feasibility is, it's a fancy spreadsheet that has basically costs, revenue, profit, right? And we try to break it. We've increased the cost. We've decreased the revenue. We've been very conservative. We've had contingencies in there, and it still looked good. We sat down with the valuer, and he's like, man, this is a good site, this, that. Sat down with the architect. We sat down with the agents, people around. And then I rang the solicitor. It was 4:30, and it was at 5 o'clock. We had to go unconditional. And I rang her, and I said, listen, the deal is done. We're not going ahead. And I chatted with James an hour earlier. So James thinks the deal's dead in the water. And she goes, why? I go, we need a little bit more time. And they've already gave, this is their first extension that they already gave us. And they were reluctant to give us this extension to begin with. And I rang the agent, and the agent basically, he said, I don't know what to say. So
Finance extension or due diligence extension?
Finance. Due diligence, we already wiped. So I said, Nicole, okay, the deal's dead in the water. She goes, why? And I explained to her. She goes, why don't you just request the extension anyways? She's like, do you really want to buy it? I'm like, to be honest with you, I really do. Like, my gut is telling me we need to do it. And she goes, just put in an extension. Just put in another extension. The worst they can say is no, and it's done. But at least the ball's in your court right now still. Mm. And that is what you need to remember, right? Right now, I could say yes, or I can get an extension or request an extension. Then it goes back, the ball goes back to them, and they have the control. But right now, the control's on our side with what we can do. So I said, you know what?
Still under finance?
Still under finance. I said, request the extension for finance. And I think it was another 2 or 3 weeks, whatever it was, a couple of weeks. And that was at like 4:45. She sends the email. I didn't know. I didn't hear back that night. I didn't know because it was already past the 5 o'clock the email was sent. The next morning she rings and she goes, you got the extension. And that's another sign for me, like these gut things that happen, right? Seen it before. Came on the market, couldn't get it, comes back on the market, I know the agent. I was with him a week before. Synergies align. Next thing you know, finance gets approved again. James doesn't even know. I ring James the next morning and go, hey, we got finance extended. And he's like, what do you mean? He's like, you didn't even fucking tell me. I'm like, I honestly went in thinking it was going to be no anyways, right? And then we get the extension. So, and this is the difference, right, of these sometimes knee-jerk decisions that you got to make. And these are the differences of putting your kahunas on the line, right? After doing your due diligence, after trying to break the feasibility, right? And going with your gut, these are the actions that you need to take in life. These are the actions that you need to take in business. All of us here have taken massive action in life to be where you are today. Adam has sold everything, right? That is massive action to take control of his life, right? And live in Europe and do what he's doing. Not many people would do that. Not many people would do what James and I have done and the way that we've done it. And we're going to break down this deal in future. I just told him prior to the pod, let's document this process the whole way, right? And videotape us with the consultants and timeframes and these different things, right? Mark, which we'll roll into now, right? You just doubled up your money over a couple of weeks, but you put a lot of money at risk. Why? Because you did the due diligence. You did the research. You backed yourself. And that is why I was confident in this deal. That is why I asked for that other extension. And that is why this deal is now come to fruition, right? Because James and I have backed it. He did the work. He's done a lot of work on it. And here we are today now, unconditional. And this, the reality is the work is just starting now. Right? The real work happens now. Sure.
And not only that, I guess along the way too, for anyone that's...
So, wait, boys, you're unconditional now.
Yeah, we are. But
congratulations.
Up until that point, though, we were showing representing to the agent and the owner we were doing the work. I had consultants up on site. We have demolition guys here. We have other guys, on the site getting all the quotes. You know, it's like we weren't sitting on our hands just toying with the owner and just, you know, full of shit. So the agent actually went into bat for us when he worked. He goes, it was probably, obviously, yeah, they get paid a commission. We get that. But he was saying, look, the guys are at the table. They just need this extension. I don't think they're full of shit. And then when we did get that extension through and we said we're going to go uncon, we need to kick the settlement out even further. So at that point where now the seller is like, all right, I've come this far on the journey. And the seller is at the point of going, look, any more of this bullshit, I'm happy to walk. I'm not that desperate.
That's an important point. Let's double click on that. Because people would make this mistake, right? Because if settlement was one of the issues, right, they may, before wanting to go unconditional, they may want to try and negotiate settlement. And it's likely if you try and negotiate finance clause and settlement at the same time, he's going to cut you loose. So you kind of have to take a bit of a chance, which is what you guys done. You went unconditional and then you went in and asked for a settlement extension.
No, but other way around. We said we'll go unconditional, but we need an extension on the settlement. So we use that as the leverage point. It's like we're right at the point. We've got the money and we got it lined up. We're prepared to go unconditional where if we walk, we rip up $444,000.
We just kicked
it out another month, I think it was. So, yeah. I mean, this thing was supposed to settle, I think it was early May, and we now kicked this thing out to nearly to the end of June.
Yeah.
But as I said, it was because we didn't dick the agent around, we actually showed that we were moving forward. It was just such a tight time frame for any developer to put a project together. So, and as we said, look, the leverage point was probably from the agent. I can only imagine the conversation was from the agent to the seller. So we're here now. He's risking probably $250,000 in commission that he's done his work for, and he could... And he is like, look, they're here, they're going to go uncon, but we just need an extra 18 or 21 days, which is not going to kill you. And if it push came to shove and he said, well, I want to get some points on an extra $5,000 for 4 weeks through, I can't remember what it was, 21 days, Eric, something like that. And we probably would have paid it to the deals there.
That's the importance of your credibility, James, of your credibility and Eric's credibility. It's likely that if a first time person trying to get into a development was trying to ask for these extensions and pull these things together, they probably get knocked back. So that's why it's important to have people with credibility and experience, because the agent and the vendor, et cetera, they're more likely to work with you. So, yeah, you know, having someone in your corner that's got the experience is very important when trying to negotiate these type deals.
And another thing too, earlier when I was like, why did I do this with James? Obviously, another one is obviously I trust James. But secondly is, this isn't just a one-off deal. This will be the first of hopefully many that we do together, and one that will collaborate together with the likes of you, Mark, if you want to get involved on an investment, sure, from an investment point of view. You, Adam, we were talking off camera about there's still going to be an opportunity here in future, you know, to come in on this deal. And that for me is what excites me the most, mm-hmm, you know, is like I said before, mm-hmm, is us winning together. If James wasn't doing this deal with me, could I do it on my own? Yes. Could I get a project manager to manage it? Yes. Could James do it on his own? Yes. But the answer is I probably wouldn't have bought it. That's the reality. Why? Because again, I know, you know, what I want, you know, and that is very important, is asking the question to yourself, what do you actually want? What is important to you? And what are your values? And all of it just gives a tick of approval for me on this.
Just to put a little ribbon around this too, is that Eric mentioned the work has only just started. And this thing, honestly, the shit could hit the fan. This could go tits up. We don't have a crystal ball with the market. We've got a pretty clear or a strong bias as to which way the market's going to go the next 24 to 36 in this southeast corner, especially in the pocket of Burley where it's bought. It's a pretty rare block. There's only two blocks that size left up there. And I actually had my hand on my foot on with another developer partner of mine about probably 7 or 8 years ago, and we got screwed over by the agent. So it's rare as hen's teeth. There is only one left. So scarcity played a big role in that side up there as well.
Just yeah, that one and having a couple plan, like not just plan A, right? Not this is the only thing we can do. Like plan B, this isn't a vacant block of land that you're going to be buying, right? And then if something happens, you're sitting on this site that is just not generating any revenue. If something were to happen, we still have a site that's got 4 units on it that right now the rent is well under market value. Another thing doing due diligence, excuse me. They don't have leases. All those tenants in there are paying month by month. Perfect. Because what's going to happen is hopefully these people aren't listening to the podcast and reading between the lines on what site this is. But the reality is they're all going to be given an opportunity to stay but pay market rent. Right. So that gives us more flexibility. So I've already done the calculations going, if for whatever reason we weren't able, right, to actually engage in construction, or the market has changed a little bit and we're like want to sit on our hands, I've already worked out that we will be able to hold this site moving forward with the income that is coming in. And that's very important as well. And that gives me comfort as well. Or if I knew I could call on someone like Adam or someone like a mate of mine, like Chris or Paul or whoever it is, and say, hey boys, just so you know, this is the situation. You want to come in and help out? Like, and that gives me more and more and more comfort.
The most important element in property development is time. The thing that you mentioned it before with the finance and settlement, et cetera, but the thing that has killed me in developments before or made me have to liquidate at a price cheaper than I wanted to or whatever is time. Time is generally the most important thing with these sites, isn't it?
Yep. Yeah, I'm just to close this off, guys, because we're at the top of the hour already. I can't believe it, but we are. I just want to put myself in the shoes of the young person listening to this thinking, all right, I want to make my money in real estate development right now. I don't have any credibility and I don't have any money, but I do believe that I could learn this, right? I could learn this skill. What do I do? And I want to sort of just fill in a couple of the blanks in case you missed it. The things that are hidden in plain sight here, not only like having an Eric in this deal. So James is actually experienced in real estate, but for the purposes of this demo, we're just going to pretend that he doesn't have the development experience that he does. But essentially, you know, having an Eric is not only going to give you, because I suspect you had to put down a 5 or 10% deposit. That was the chunk of cash that was needed, like, before the finance clause. And when you're dealing with, let's say it's a $4 million property, that's a big chunk of cash for most people who don't have it, right? So 400 grand or whatever might have been needed. I don't know what it was, but let's just say it's that. It's not just having access to the money. That's not the only thing that's important here. It's the experience, like, as in knowing that the deal itself is sound. And so if you're sitting there going, okay, I can go out and do like James and go and find deals and try to find things, but how do I get an Eric, a guy that has the ability to write the check for $500,000 when it's needed and has the eyes and the experience to actually green light it with some level of confidence and has perhaps the network of people that, like, I suspect that you guys didn't spend a lot on those architects walking the site and going to town planners having meetings because they know Eric. And
they're all free.
We haven't spent a cent yet.
You haven't spent a cent. Now, the average person coming in who doesn't have that network, this is, again, why you need to partner with somebody who does have the network and the experience, because all those town planners and that will invest time with Eric and James because they know Eric's done a four pack of houses on Burley Hill that you can just point to and say, Eric did that. He bought that block and bought it. So they're not wasting their time, right? And so what you want to be thinking about and looking at this, and what the boys just said, what Eric just said, is gold. He said, I'm looking for a long-term relationship here. So he's looking to form a relationship with James. Once they back this one out profitably, James will never have to go anywhere ever again in his life for money if he can deliver the money back to the first guy. Because the first guy is just going to roll over and become the second guy and then the third guy. You know what I mean? So if you're listening, this is why unemployable property is so important and valuable, because you can go there to learn the skills and then you can go there to meet the people like Eric and like James. James will become Eric shortly, right, with a couple of these deals. And Shannon and Carson are there and I'm there, like people who have money but not time, right? So what I'm saying, and the other piece I didn't want you to miss is, James did something very, very important. And Eric mentioned it, but don't miss this. He didn't just have a coffee with Eric and say, what do you think of this deal? He then went away and made it real. He went and built a website. He went and showed real, like, I'm not fucking around here. I'm here to make money. I don't want to just have a circle jerk coffee with you, Eric. I want to actually do a deal. And here's how, in the real world, here's how you demonstrate that intent, right, is by actually producing things.
And I forgot to mention as well, not only did he do that, but he mentioned earlier, he put a document together, roles and expectations. It wasn't just a 2-page document. This thing that I think was probably a 25 to 30 page, well-written, ChatGPT influenced, right, document with every role and expectation and timeline. Like, expectations, when you expect me to reply to an email within 24 hours, text message, is it WhatsApp? Is it, like, that's how detailed it was. And that when you see that, you go, even though you know the person's smart and you trust them and they're onto it and you can see that, but when it's done in real time, it just gives you so much confidence. Like, when he shares a screen and he rolls through the folders of this project already, there's folders within folders within folders, with it, like, yeah, the organization. And that is so key in doing anything like this.
So when you rock up at the unemployable property group, the difference is most people are there to have a cup of tea and dip milk arrowroot biscuits, as I once joked about at a reliable conference, right? They all want to have their masterminds, so they meet on a Tuesday night. And, hi, Cheryl, how you doing? You know, how's your property journey going? And then a savage like James turns up and says, all right, who the fuck is here to do business today? Here's a deal. Here's what I've done. Here's what my expectations are. Here's what I'm looking for in a partner. Here, you know, that guy, it's so easy to stand out because you just, you know, like, one of the things I'm doing right now is I'm getting business cards here in Limassol. I'm getting new photographs reshot of myself. I'm upgrading my website because I've got a deal at the moment that I'm looking at. But I want to put my absolute best foot forward. I'm trying to arrange a meeting with them when I'm in America to negotiate the deal. But I'm not just going to turn up. I want to prep my shit so that I've got the best chance possible of them going, fuck, we want to do a deal with this guy, right? Because they don't know me over here like they do in Australia, right? I've got nothing. I've got to start again, right? Like, so what I'm saying is, if you're in that position of trying to get from zero to one, right? And to get your first property deal and to find a guy or girl who's got the money and the experience to back you, then get serious about the way you present yourself. Go and invest in a personal branding overhaul. You know, if you have to, go get a proper headshot taken, go get some real business cards made. Go get, do some, learn, oh, I don't know how to make a pretty document into Canva. Well, stop fucking moaning. Go on YouTube and learn how to use Canva so you can present yourself well. Right? This is how you actually attract experience and money in reality. And James, once this deal's done, and I've no doubt they'll smash this out of the park, James will find another deal, and then they'll find another deal. And as an investor, what I look to do is to find guys like that and go, listen, guys, bring me into a deal. Eric's the same. Bring me into a deal. Let's do one deal. And then if that deal goes well, I'll fund you again and again. Because what happens is the further you go up the value chain, Robert Kiyosaki's cash flow quadrant, in the end, you end up as an investor and you're looking for reliable partners who are competent, who can compound your money out past inflation. And James will absolutely compound this way outside of inflation, I've no doubt. So
a simple litmus test out there as well. Like being a property developer, literally your job is to put out fires. You're everyday firefighter, 24/7, around the clock firefighter. You have to problem solve and put out the fires. That's it. Being a property developer gets glorified, but literally all you're doing 24/7 is putting out fires and solving problems. So to Adam's point, like if you can't work out a way to solve the problem of your inexperience or your lack of capital, then you really have to have a look at whether property development is for you. If you do excel at solving problems and being resourceful, then you don't need any capital or any experience to be a good property developer. Your resilience and your ability to solve problems will get you there over time, like Adam's just outlined.
I think a good environment to be in is unemployable property. And how do they get there, Eric? It's unemployable.
So unemployable property, right now we have a free Facebook group. So if you go to Facebook and type in unemployable property, you'll find it. You'll be asked a series of questions. The admin team will then approve you. And we're just putting in there free content, breaking down deals, talking about due diligence, feasibilities, finance. We've done a lot of property pods as well that we've cut up as well. And we're putting in information there. We've done modules with Shannon Carson and I. For those of you guys that don't know Shannon and Carson, 4 years ago, Carson was cleaning carpets. Shannon was a machine operator. 4 years later, they've accumulated $100 million worth of land deals, over 170 lots. And continuing to just, buy more and create just amazing abundance in this land subdivision space. We have a property coaching program off the back of that. It's not a course. It's literally, holding hands in the community with the likes of Shannon and Carson, breaking out deals, doing bus tours, events where we're sitting down in classrooms settings. And literally breaking down feasibilities and why they haven't bought this and why they've bought that, like real life, real deals. Like what we're doing right now on this podcast, guys, not many people are doing. We're unpacking real life deals where people usually hold their cards very close to their chest and not tell anyone. We're going to be documenting this throughout the whole time. So unemployable property on Facebook.
Yeah, and not only that, I mean, even just in that free community already, just the moderation that's been going on, I can't remember. There's probably more than 1,000 people in there now. There's some smart cats in there doing some big shit, like that.
Amazing exactly people, like the community.
And they're sharing openly. They're lifting up the kimono, and it's free. So get in there, and there's people, I can guarantee there'll be a lot of DMing going on the background. Can we catch up a copy? Can you explain it? So the young guy out there is talking to the guys, put an 8-pack together, whatever it might be. But in that community already, there's fire, literally, and it's free. I would be going there.
And I can't underestimate the value of those bus tours to people. Like what Eric said there, what he means is at the next bus tour they do, I suspect this project will probably be on the route. Yep. So last time we took them to your Burley site where you got the house and put four new houses on the hill there, and then a whole bunch of commercial sites and everything. But these are actual real property deals that we've done ourselves or people in the community have done. We put you in a bus. We drive you to the site, we get out of the bus, and then we walk around the property and explain to you what happened here. We show you photos of the before, the after, the pre-valuation, the post-valuation, how the money was made, and you're literally standing on the site of the property. And that
being able to see it, touch it, feel it,
changes people's it changes people's mind, you know, like completely when you actually see it. And then you meet the person who made the money. And that the last thing I want to say about this, for those of you, I'm just thinking about the guy or girl that's really at the bottom and starting here. The one thing that's super appealing to an investor like Eric is when you bring all of that collateral and effort and say, listen, mate, I don't care whether I make no money on this first deal. You can have the whole lot, right? Now, I just want to learn and form a relationship with someone like you. Now, someone like Eric is probably going to go, mate, I'll cut you in, don't worry, and will, because he would be stupid not to if you go through that education process. And if you've made him money, he's going to want to keep that relationship, right? So it's so. But what a lot of deals come undone, and I'm going to point out the older people here, you know, guys that are over 40 going, oh, I'm over 40 now, it's time to get paid. I'm like, okay, well, you're not James. James has had years of experience already. James has developed 100 townhouses or something already, right? So, but if you've got no results, be prepared to take no equity if you have to in the start. Just fucking get a win. Go from zero to one. Get one relationship with somebody. And I can see Eric smiling because he agrees with me, right? These guys who rock up and go, I've got it all, blah, 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 blah. I found the deal. I want. But you got nothing on the board. You know, that's not going to.
In our modules, in the unemployable property, we've done a full recording of Shannon and Carson, right? Breaking down every deal they've done right from the first one and how much money they gave away. And then the second one, how much money they gave away, like real terms, over like 15 grand they made. And then they made 25 grand. And it's just, it's so humbling to see that. And you see the whole process on how they structured the deals, why they structured the deals. You're always going to give the most away at the beginning when you don't have a lot to give and you don't have a lot of that experience. And then as you learn, it's like Brazilian jiu-jitsu, right? You're going to be a black belt, you know, within, you know, it takes about 10 years if you're consistent, right, to become a black belt. And eventually you're going to earn your stripes. And then eventually when you become the black belt, guess what? You're the one teaching others. And that's what will happen, right?
And no one see, like, you don't see the journey, you don't see the 10-year journey of someone becoming a black belt. You see them post the fact that they became a black belt, or you hear that they're a black belt. This pod, I think it nearly went for 2 hours, but that pod, like, literally takes you through the whole journey from the first deal to like the 10th or the 12th or whether they're up there. And you can see that their level of, you can see their level of experience, their level of confidence, their level of network change as they take you through these deals. I was sitting there just going, holy fuck. Like
you felt like you've seen the black eyes, the kick in the nuts, the shit sandwich all along the way, you know, and then like the graduation. Yeah, okay,
this is what it takes. This is what it takes. This is the roadmap. And if I'm willing to put in the time and effort, I can get that too, right?
But you tell me where else that right now are you getting that level of in-depth, real information online, real deals that people are literally exposing, right, their entire deal, how they made it, where they raised the money, how much profit they made, why they bought it.
No one's doing it in Australia. Adam, I think you showed me some guys who are doing it for commercial property in the US on YouTube, and they're cool, but no one's doing that in Australia. No one.
We're basically doing the Homozy model, which is we'll teach you everything for free, and then if you want to actually get Shannon and Carson's personal time to look at your projects and deals, then you can pay them for some coaching and they'll help you. But otherwise it's all there and it's all free, and the community and the resources. And I think we're getting close to 1500 members in there, which is a huge amount of resources.
We just started.
Yeah. We just started like a few weeks ago. So get yourself in there, because there's so much money to be made when you collaborate. And I keep saying this, Australians have to get better at collaborating than the rest of the world. Everybody collaborates, right? Like, I'll just show you just one quick thing. I'll just cover his name, but I was down at Ayanapa, and I'm down there at the beach, got chatting to this guy, and there's a swimming hole, and there's a dude standing there in his board shorts. I'm standing in my board shorts, and we just got chatting, and his name's Erez. I'll just cover his last name and info, but basically big Jewish real estate developer from Israel, and he lives now here in Cyprus, and he's building stuff, and he's like, dude, let's catch up. Let's go have coffee. Let's see if we can do a deal together. That's so European, right? That's why Eric is a WOG, right? He's a networker. It's natural, right? It's the same here. And so his office is right around the corner from where I live, as it turns out. And I said, what are you doing in Limassol? And he says, well, I live 30 minutes from the West Bank and I can pay no tax here and build property. I'm like, you're my guy, let's talk. But that's what we've got to get better at as Australians. We've got to start leaning in, collaborating, being open, trying to do deals. And that's a wonderful place to do it in there. So get yourself over there, guys,
Just a heads up, Adam. Not only am I a WOG, but since starting the podcast, I am also a SEPO.
A SEPO.
So yeah, a SEPO, which is basically it's short form for septic tank, and it's someone that is not from the country.
No, what it is, it's septic tank yank. They think you're a yank.
Yes, that's it. So yeah, they think I'm a yank. Yeah, they think I'm a yank. But it's interesting to see, you know, some of the things that you get called throughout the pod. But yeah, that was a new one.
Yeah. And how can we take advice from an immigrant or
for a guy that's like not that. Even from this country? Yeah,
and that came from fucking Barry having his arrowroot biscuits guaranteed.
Yeah, yeah. We just want to help, man.
Yeah. And it's all free. Sorry for being free.
What do they say? If you want to be rich, don't ask someone who's broke.
Anyway.
Yeah, people. Yeah. Anyway, so guys, I hope you've enjoyed the pod today.
We got one more thing to go through.
We got a product.
Explain to the.
I'll just give people a quick. Yep. The reason guys to listen to these ads is they're not ads. They are, but they're ads of products. We don't get paid for these ads. They're free ads for you guys. So if you're a listener and you have a product that you're trying to start, if you're an entrepreneur and you're trying to get exposure, we will give you free exposure on the pod for being a listener. And if you want to get your product featured, like we're just about to do here, just send an email to hello@unemployable.com.au. Tell us a little bit about your story, you know, because the story sells the product. People buy products from people. So let us know, and then we will show it here on the podcast. And what we want you guys to do as a listener, if you're getting value from the pod, go buy that person's stuff and leave them a nice review. And it helps the entrepreneurial community in Australia to grow and New Zealand to grow. So, Eric, what have we got today?
So today's company, her name's Deborah Jane, and she owns a business called Eco Zen Wellbeing, which is magnesium beauty products. She's from the Gold Coast, and she's got a full-blown package. She's got a fair few packages that she sent through for a few of us here. But so it comes in a purple box, as you can see here, right?
Eco Zen.
On it. Yeah, so it's EcoZen, ECOZEN, EcoZen Wellbeing, so empowering health and vitality. So when you open the box, it's a beautiful, beautiful wooden box that's got a burnt-in emblem, and also it's got a few pieces of lavender. So I'll take this out of the box.
Where do we find it, Eric? Is it ecozen.com.au or something?
So it's, ecozen. So www.ecozen, ECOZEN, wellbeing.com.au. And you can also find them on Instagram at ecozen wellbeing. So here's the box. You can see it a bit better now.
Oh, wow. Beautiful. So
it's a proper, wooden box. With a nice little ribbon on it with the lavender. I'm just going to take that off so I can actually open it. So you've got, try not to hit my mic here. You've got this little latch. So you open up this latch, and inside you've got three beautiful, very, very nicely packaged items. One is a magnesium oil called Harmony plus natural extracts, and then we've got a smaller magnesium oil, and this is more targeted for sports, as you can see on the packaging. And then you also have a small green like dropper, full glass, so not plastic, and these are magnesium vitality drops. So beautiful packaging, and inside it actually has inside as well. In here, you can see it's burnt into the timber, and it says, elevate, calm, soak, and well-being. Elevate your, I think it says elevate your, that one's a little bit hard to read, but something along the lines of elevate, calm, soak, and well-being. Yeah, so again, eco-zen, well-being.
Magnesium is such a big thing for sleep and all other elements, especially muscular and whatnot. So
yeah, and funny enough, she's and again, guys, when you're sending in your products, don't just put it in a box or put it in a DHL bag, right? Like, check out the letter, right? Like a full-blown letter explaining who she is, what she's doing, why she's doing it, what's included in here. And she also has a special offer for unemployable viewers. So to celebrate, I'm offering an exclusive 25% discount. So more humans can experience the benefits of magnesium in its purest and most luxurious form. Gift sets are the best and most cost-effective way to purchase. Check them out on my website. So I'm assuming, not sure how she'll give that to you, but if you are interested in purchasing, maybe hit them up on Instagram, let them know that you've seen it here. Again, we get nothing out of this, guys. We're literally here just trying to promote new businesses, new startups, getting in front of as many people as possible. And this is how you create a network. And we were just talking about deals this whole podcast and how deals come about. And P.S., she's got a cheeky little ask. Yes, it's cheeky, but what the heck? I'm looking for an investor or investors as I'm ready to scale and take this even further. I know I'm a winner, great profit margins. Love to chat with anyone that may want to know more. And this is how you get around people doing things. Like you said, Adam, what'd you do? Idea, capital execution. Adam's finest.
That's awesome, guys. Great job on the product. Next week, we will cover Mark. We want to learn more about this these two trades and how you're up 100%. Maybe next week you'll be up 200% or down 500. Who knows? We'll see.
Let's keep it for a good story. It's a good story regardless, right?
Don't let the truth get in the way of a good story, eh?
At least we can timestamp it today, as at today's date, the 28th. You were up 100%.
I'm up 100% at the moment. By next week, we might be down 50%, but that is the world of trading. It would be great either way.
That's incredible, dude, in a week. I just love it. And I'm going to put this out there just quickly at the end. We are Mark and I, and I haven't spoken to Eric and James yet about this, but later this year, we're looking to do an event for charity where we're going to talk about Bitcoin and about trading, and all the proceeds will go to charity. And I reached out to our crazy mate, Ben, who watched the podcast last week. Ben made $1.7 million, I think it was, in like 2 days just recently from trading and doing what Mark does. And I said, Ben, would you come on and be interviewed if we do this event for charity? And he said, on two conditions, you can't say who I am, that you can't record it, but otherwise I'll come in and I'll drop some fire. So Ben's agreed to come on the condition that we don't reveal who he is and we don't record the session. So tickets are going to be super limited, but 100% of the money is going to go to restore eyesight to people in Java.
Amazing.
And do it in collaboration with Unemployable. And Mark's agreed to do a day on trading, and I'm going to do a day on Bitcoin and global freedom on that. So yeah, so that's going to come up. Details will be coming in future pods.
You know what, one thing, you got to go back to him now. Mm-hmm. Those are your two rules. My rule is we get to pick the mask.
The mask.
And the douche.
Oh my god. I had a bet with Ben that Bitcoin would hit 100K, and he was like, it's all bullshit, it's all fake internet money. And the winner, I had to wear a chicken suit, so I still got to claim that. So maybe we'll blend that in somehow.
That's funny.
There you go. But he's an interesting character. He doesn't normally talk, and he would never do a public talk normally. But he's a really interesting guy, and I'm looking forward to whoever does come and support that event having the opportunity just to. I texted Eric some of the banter between us.
So good.
Just to show you, like, some of the trades the guy does are just really interesting. And
well, it's just the research. Yeah, but the research that he goes into. Like, I was reading those messages and the detail that he's going into from not even, like there's macroeconomics, but he's looking at it so differently again, you know, when it comes to
like wars and oil
and who's buying and like just unbelievable.
He goes, I know that they're having breakfast in Moscow, you know, and Putin's having his breakfast around that time. And I know that he has his briefing at that time. So there'll be announcements coming within an hour of that. So I've got my clock set to Moscow time. And I've like literally that's the level of detail that he went into. And I shared it with Eric saying, this is why I want this guy to come and talk a little bit. But he said, I'm just no cameras, no recording, but I will do it for charity. So that's going to be really interesting.
Yeah.
So I'll be Mark, me, Ben, and a few other crazy bastards from the Bitcoin world.
Yeah. I want to meet him. When he said he wants to meet me, I'll come down. I'll come down the coast and I'll just be like,
he wants to come and meet you. He's very smart, but he wants to come up and meet you, Eric, and just so you can meet him. And he's a good guy. So anyway, little teaser about what's coming in the next few weeks. So
cool.
Mark, thanks for being able to dive into yours next week. Boys, congrats on going unconditional on your site. Can't wait to see how that unfolds. I'm sure you'll make millions, but if it's a train wreck, then we'll enjoy you know, the learnings from it.
Nothing better than a good train wreck. You love more spectators to a car crash than the win.
A victory parade, you're right. Yeah, that's where all the learnings are. Let's hopefully get – we're rooting for you having done enough of learnings. It's now time to bank. So let's go with that one. All right, guys, lots of love. Thanks for watching, and we'll talk soon. Bye for now.
Hey there. I hope you enjoyed that episode of Unemployable. If you'd like to watch another episode, just click there.